Welcome. You're listening to Refusing to Implode Politely, a show all about London spoken word, with me, Zoe Stegosaurus.
This piece is called Ode to My Playground. Where I grew up, the only thing that ever blew up was bombs removing hands from cuffs and also leaving eyesight fucked. Let me take this story and expand it. Army barracks, that's where the package landed. One man looked and then handled it. He was left with memories where his hands were and only his mind's eye to view them, and I was 10 then. We hear alarm begin. We automatically start to grin. Not knowing what lies deep within, they say they planted a bomb to kill the kids. I hear this and my ears begin to twitch. In the end, it was a false alarm. We all go back to calm and no one came to harm. But I was 10 then. But let's play with time and hit rewind, because by 6, knowing death's box was ticked, I leave the house for dinner's sake. My mum complains about the whinge I make. Arguments begin to break. Evil thoughts start to wake. A date with the devil did someone make. I feel I need a cape to fly away. A year has passed and that seems like just yesterday, and I'm seeing the lifeless image of my father's face. See, we play football just to waste away the days, or is this chemistry the remedy for the tragedy we plenty see? Because we were angels then, back between the age of 6 and 10. But we aged, and many of us changed. Some got the taste for rage, and some put the pen down on a new page. But we saw blades piercing skin, and new dealers of crack and heroin. We lost a sense of sentiments, and some got addicted to amphetamines. But every year, we grew thicker skin. We waited for the daylight to chase away the night sky, because we knew too many who lost the breath of life. And that's why so many are empty inside, and wouldn't know how to cry even if their mother died. But everywhere you go, there's a rich and a poor side. It's like one side is poverty, the other are £1 million properties, and we wonder why there's muggings, stabbings and killings, with the social inequality mixed down with advertising, telling us we need these things, like Nikes and true religion jeans, a world full of broken dreams, but not dreams that were never achieved, one set in vanity, because that seems like insanity to me. So stop acting like the trigger's been pulled before they shoot. That's how you lose the pavement lines that keep you sane in mind. Follow the same path each time. Follow the path of broken dreams until you're where it seems. They sew the seams together with agony. Stop. Reverse the image. Until you can see their pores are in it. Pause a minute. Can you break the laws of physics? No. Can you retract the claws from the pores you just saw in the mirror image? It's all perspective, no objective, no incentive to buy into this metropolis, but we did it. No chance of stopping this. From the poison in our food and our water to letting our sons and our daughters be taught to get their personalities from magazines with the glossiest images in them, to trusting politicians who raised stone walls around my estates, took the disadvantage and placed them in them, gave them hope but no chance of escaping them, then bought in drugs to create the system, then created terrorism. Take a second, breathe, then listen. These are the descendants of the people who created racism, took their hatred of nations and used it to taint them. Now no longer difference fuels the fire beneath their iris. Now the lesser tire these titans, and as long as your rubber band around your upper arm, some sort of self-inflicted harm. Young man with a knife out in the night, crack rocks in your pipe, then that's fine in their eyes. But don't think you can give them the slip by making it big. The work you intake, oh, you're sick. Force your finger on the trigger and wait for the... But those left, those who escape the fine mesh of this net, find time for the form of art that's at the bottom of your heart. Use your words of wisdom. Use your cynicism. Tell her the future you envision, because free minds in these dark times, that's my vision.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Refusing to Implode Politely. I'm joined today in the studio by Mr. Jake Wild-Hall. Hello, Jake.
Hello, Zoe.
Hey, how are you doing today?
I'm good. I was a bit ill this morning, but I've had some Barocca and I'm feeling better.
You bounced back. And why were you ill this morning?
I just run down, like, post-Edinburgh, still run. My body's catching up with me.
Mm. Has there been any research into how long that process takes? Because I imagine everyone's in that state right now.
Well, I know that some people it takes longer. Faye Roberts, poor Faye Roberts, is very ill. She's got laryngitis, and she is not very well at all. The doctor has said, like, up to 10 weeks. Well, last time she had laryngitis, it took her 10 weeks to get over. So, I mean, some people say that it takes them until the next year to think that it's a good idea again.
It's like giving birth to kids, you know. They say it's like one of the most excruciating experiences you can have. And yet women will do it again and again because you love it so much that you forget after a while, yeah, and you're like, I'll go through it again.
Well, I don't want to compare. I don't want to go straight out there and compare Edinburgh to Giving Birth.
I did it, don't worry. I'm allowed to.
Yeah. I feel like, you do come out with a baby, I suppose, but you don't. I was going to say the physical demands on your body aren't as much. It's only a month. But giving birth is a long time.
That's true, but you've extended that metaphor because I didn't even think about how you come out with a baby, but you do.
Yeah, yeah.
It's good.
Your show is becomes your baby.
Yeah, yeah, that's good. Any tips for people who are not like in such a severe state as it's going to take 10 weeks to get better, but what are you doing to cope? What's helping?
I'm not being that. I should be better to myself, but I have to work. So resting on my days off, reading, taking a break from going to so much poetry stuff. So if you're a comedian, just take a break from going to so much comedy stuff. Get your headspace in your headspace. I never really read all my life. Like, it wasn't a big thing to me. I've probably read about 15 books in my whole life, maybe less. As soon as I got back from Edinburgh, I started to read. It just helped me just channel into something that isn't like the TV or just my own headspace and chill. So maybe read, Barocca, eat well, always eat well, lots of root vegetables and beans. If you're a vegetarian, definitely beans. That's your source of protein. Yeah.
I like that. Root vegetables. Doctor's orders. It's cool. And also, what I was panning you to say, have more of those amazing tablets. The Fizzy Good Make Feel Nice. It's so good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Definitely. Barocca, you know, all the time.
Yeah.
What is it? Fizzy Good Make Feel Nice.
I call it Fizzy Good Make Feel Nice.
That's the best name.
It's from Black Books. It's from Black Books.
Oh my god! I can't believe I don't know that, because it is absolutely genius. In fact, I might go home and watch some Black Books after.
That is a healing.
After
technique.
the war of love, which is me and my girlfriend going to watch Arsenal versus Chelsea. She being an Arsenal fan, me being a Chelsea fan. Then maybe we should watch Black Books together just to kind of make up. Because we're not going to be, no matter what happens, neither of us is going to like each other after the Arsenal-Chelsea match.
Man, that's serious. That's intense. So I don't care about anything. So, I mean, I do care, obviously, about a load of stuff, but I'm not a competitive person at all. I've never experienced that, being on that side of the war, and someone I care about being on the other side of the war, and like, I just don't get it. Sorry.
No, I'm glad. I'm so happy for you, because it makes so little sense. We all care about something that is, at the end of it, pointless.
Like life.
Yeah. Because life is pointless. Like, you just come in kicking and screaming and you leave probably the same way.
Yeah. Well, that was a nice start.
That
kicks us off well. I'm going to steer us a little bit towards poetry to begin with.
I'm happy to talk about poetry.
Just about. Your voice says yes. Your face is like, allow.
I was enjoying Barocca and Black Books. But yes, let's do.
So I keep hearing the word Barocca and it sounds to me like some fancy coffee. And I'm like, wow, you are living the high life. And then I'm like, oh, it's fizzy good. That's fine.
Fizzy good, make feel nice. Yeah. Oh, it's brilliant. That's going to come. I'm going to write a poem called Fizzy Good, Make Feel Nice.
I would be thrilled.
I'm going to do that. And then I'm going to perform it at the next Boomerang and dedicate it to you.
Oh. Jake, do you know what? I wanted to, you know, when I first asked you to come on this show, I wanted to get you on here before you went to Edinburgh.
Yeah.
To get you at your peak. No, to specifically because, you know, you had the fundraiser for Edinburgh. I was like, I don't have the money, but if you come on the show, then I can like present you with the £30 obligatory poem and you can write a poem about this and then you could do, and I'd be like, oh, that would be so nice. But then I'm like, oh, I just have to inspire you. I don't have the money.
Yeah. So you've got one now. You've inspired me to write.
That's so good.
Yeah, we owe some people some poems, actually.
Yeah, do it.
We haven't done that yet. And obviously they won't donate next year if we don't. So,
ooh, is there like a cut-off point for that? What's the time limit?
For what?
Well, I mean, is there a deadline for you to write those poems?
No.
Do it. Just
I don't
nice
even know
it.
Who we have to write poems for, if I'm honest. I don't do a lot of the online stuff for Boomerang. So, right, let's talk about. Ask me some of the questions you want to actually ask me instead of me just talking about Edinburgh. Even though that's, you know, we can talk
this
about
is
that more.
Scene setting. But anyway, yes,
yeah,
I will.
Scene setting is good.
I will ask you.
Where did that tree come from?
Oh, we should have an improv show. That would be so... Oh, you've just inspired me.
Okay.
I've studied improv. Let's do it. Okay, another time. For now, for anyone who hasn't been blessed to hear your performance before or meet you, can you give yourself a kind of introduction?
Well, as a poet.
As a poet. As someone on the spoken word scene as well, because you're not just a poet. How long have you been writing?
I've been writing for over 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
I've been performing 7 years last week.
Oh.
It's either the 18th, the 19th, or the 20th. I haven't found the ticket, but 7 years was my 7 years ago last week was my first performance.
Where was it?
At an event called Poetry and Pims, run by Dean Atter and Deanna Roger, mm-hmm. who then became my poetry teachers. So my major poetry influences, Dean Atter and Deanna Roger, they were my first influences. And obviously, when you go out into the wide world, you get influences from all over the place, but they will all have always have a special place in my heart. Mm-hmm. I'm massively hip-hop influenced at first. Yeah, so started when I was 17. And at that point, I would say I was mostly massively hip-hop influenced, and Dean and Deanna, and doing a lot of stuff then. I had gigs then and was doing stuff. And then I had a big two-year break from poetry when I had my son. At that point, I would say that I was watching a lot more and started to be influenced by different people, the people I was around, people kind of forget what you heard, like Ricky and Matt. Influenced me a lot, Ricky a lot, because we were doing stuff on the poetry circuit together, Caroline Teague and Daisy Thurston Gent and like Joel Alterson, those people were in my circle as well. They influenced me. I'm a big fan of all of their work.
Mm.
I mean, I got massively into Shane Coisan for a while, but then I just read John Sands' book, and actually since I saw John Sands, he's massively influenced me.
Mm-hmm.
He's absolutely brilliant. If you haven't read A New Clean, read it. But then I've just got into Luke Kennard, who is he's a genius in his own right, and found quite a lot of... Yeah, loving Maria Ferguson's show was a major inspiration. Her poetry is amazing. And also her show is one of the best, most important things I've seen. It's called Fat Girls Don't Dance. Influenced by those people, really loving Luke Kennard at the moment. My girlfriend, Amy Aker, has been giving me poetry books to read. So that's kind of changed how I look at things and how I write. And so who am I on the poetry scene? I've done a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I've been to most nights and trying to make that all nights. I took a show to Edinburgh. I've run Boomerang Club, which mm-hmm. is every second Tuesday of the month. And I can't fully disclose, but no, every first
it's
Tuesday.
First. I was gonna
it's
say.
The first Tuesday of the month, guys. Ignore me. And then I can't fully disclose, but we should be every third Tuesday of the month as well. From November or October, but yeah, I guess that's who I am.
Great, yeah,
that's me.
That is who you are. In fact, I was gonna steer you back to yourself for a minute, because you managed to talk for the first like 5 minutes of who am I about like everyone else, and I was like, you're awesome for doing that, and that's excellent. But yeah, that's great. So, as a poet, what inspires you to write? What did inspire you to write before? You said hip hop. And you've kind of mentioned these individual poets, but like there must have been something, I imagine, that kind of pushed you into actually writing for yourself. In the beginning, yeah.
Okay, so the first two poems I ever wrote, one one was just angst 16-year-old Jake. I asked a girl out, and like I thought I was in love, because you know when you're 16 and you think that's happening. No, I'm in love, and I asked her out, and she was like, no. And so, like, I wrote a poem about it, and it is just incredibly sad. it's online somewhere as well, which makes it even worse.
If our listeners want to search for it, what is it called?
Oh, no.
No.
I mean, it's on SoundCloud. It's a song on SoundCloud. So if you find me on SoundCloud, which I haven't yet deleted, which I will, like, when I get home. So, I mean, I probably won't. I'm not that organised. But, yeah, so, and then the second poem I wrote... was about, you know, it had been the 10-year anniversary of my dad passing, my biological father passing, and I wrote a poem about that. So I guess my first things were, it's very personal. Mm. Started off writing about me and sharing the truth and being honest about myself as a person, not always in a very positive way. And then I'd say the other things I write about is the world and how that affects me. So I won't go into detail, but I wrote a piece. My third piece was about domestic violence. And I don't think it's very good, but it was something that affected me and I wrote it. And then obviously a lot of my stuff is quite political. My early political stuff is like political rant. I don't think it means as much as, even though Ode to My Playground I think could be made better, I think it makes the political point and ties it into something that is very real to me. Mm. So I take inspiration from what the world is doing. Unfortunately, mostly what the world is doing bad. But also, I hope I write with a huge amount of honesty. Mm. I hope I'm true to myself, even when it's difficult. So the last year, there's been a lot of poems about addiction. Mm. I write a lot about my relationships. I write breakup poems, which are negative towards myself. I hardly ever write a breakup poem, which is negative towards the other person. Write to reflect, write to change something in yourself. Think about it. I always thought about it as therapy for a long time. I do also want to engage people, so that changes how you write. If you want to engage people, you write something that is for them. But it's nice to write to reflect.
Yeah, I can understand that, actually, and I've noticed that in my own work as well. How would you say yours has changed? I mean, are there do you separate your work into pieces that will never see the light of day and pieces that go on stage? Or is there a kind of progression from one to the other throughout your history of writing? Like, how has it changed because of performance?
I put everything on stage. Mm. The first time I ever performed, I performed about my biological father dying. Mm. And it was sad and it was hard. And, you know, some people say it takes artists years and years to be honest with that. And I feel like I don't say to everyone, oh, you have to be honest. You have to reflect what's the hardest thing for you to write. Or for me, that works. So it's not about me saying that's the best way to write. It's just I put everything on stage. It feels easy. Sometimes it feels... So I wrote a whole bunch of pieces about my addiction before I ever saw help or gave up. So I was writing about, you know, my weed addiction. I'm like, now I'm clean for a couple of months. I'm two months and 2 days now. Wrote about alcohol abuse when I was abusing alcohol really badly. Wrote about massive substance abuse, and putting that on stage helps me, but it also helps having those pieces. So, you know, when you actually get better, you can look back and go, that's honest. And then you keep performing them. You don't just be like, I'm better. It's just like, you don't stop. You don't ever tell yourself you're perfect. You reflect on the bad times. It's really important for me to do that. And I don't think that's how everyone writes. And I don't think everyone should. I think we need a variety of writers in the world. And it's nice to have people who just make me laugh.
Yeah.
Because I need that sometimes. I really like that.
Yeah.
This piece, it doesn't have a title. It's this piece is about my son. Dad, your room's a mess and there's no toys in here. He is not entirely wrong. And he still asks to come over. It just helps that the room next door is a story with mountains, rivers and monsters, a tree-sized man and a pixie godmother. They build dreams. They shape days into arcs that have heroes and villains. They break for biscuits and juice. They take off for adventure until sunsets come calling and they ride off into them. I haven't named this piece either. So, up until recently, sedation was my sleep, because the thought of fighting with the bedsheet was easier to roll away than get over, until you rubbed a heartbeat back into me. I knew the morning when I woke feeling less like a war was going on in the confines of my skull and more like a peace treaty had been tabled, that you had killed an addict. Our whole story is a graveyard. There is no headstone, just dead space and decay. We burnt the home we had built in our hearts and coughed up the ash into toy soldiers who fought wars. And all this with backs turned, and every day that was has to be forgotten. And every story I ever write of us is dust, and memories are punch drunk, pulled out by spirits with little tonic.
I wanted to pick up on some stuff about the honesty. I mean, you've said it's not something you're necessarily promoting for every poet, but you've also talked about wanting to be honest and put stuff on stage primarily about yourself, and even when it's, you know, it's not good stuff, even if it's kind of like derogatory about yourself.
Yeah.
Why can you figure out why you feel driven to do that, why that makes sense to you, and how it helps? That's a difficult question.
That is. Because growth. I would say growth. It's important to grow and not stagnate as a person. I think that for everyone. And I think in some ways it's, you know, putting your reflections of what you've done wrong on stage and teaching yourself how to grow from that and being honest about it is just as important than putting what's difficult for you on stage.
Mm.
When I was in like weed group, like this like AA for stoners, basically you talk a lot about what's difficult for you. Mm. That's what you do, and most therapy is talking about what's difficult for you. I don't think we enough have like critical reflection of self.
Mm.
So like what you do wrong and how you can make that better and how you improve yourself as a person. We talk a lot about what hurts us because that's what is immediately important. And I think that is incredibly important. That's not at all me putting that down. That's not what I want to come across as saying. I just think...
But there's space for more than one reflection.
Reflection. And we, you know, people need to be honest and reflect. In Edinburgh, me and Woody had a really interesting conversation. I said, when I was younger, my parents would just tell me, like, you're being stupid. Mm. And they still do. My parents still look at me and just go, you're being stupid.
Mm.
I think we all need to do that to each other. And I think Woody made a point that is, we don't do it enough. We don't just, if someone says something stupid, we don't just be like, you're stupid, because people are offended by that. Like, I love it. Someone who's been really amazing to talk to recently and who, like, is just the biggest hug, but also, like, will smack you down if you're wrong about something. But you know that they love you still. My grandparents do exactly what she does, and I think it's why I love her so much. Anna Khan.
Yeah.
Anna Khan, like, will tell me if I say something stupid.
Yeah.
She'll discuss it. And if she needs to walk off, she'll walk off. But we both know, and I think this is something that needs to be more common in people, that doesn't change how you love someone.
Mm.
I think we need more critical response to each other. Otherwise it stagnates.
Yep.
And then it's like a, you know, like it gathers, like it's like a snowballing effect. You let something go in someone, say someone is, you know, says something sexist or something homophobic, and like you shouldn't let that gather force. Do you know what I mean? You should combat it and say, well, what you said is really stupid, but let's talk about it. We need that critical response to ourselves, and I think that's, like, I like doing that in my poetry. I challenge myself a lot. I didn't do either of them because I was trying to remember. I've got a poem called Hey You, which is just a really rubbish title for a poem, but it's about my breakup with the mother of my child, and it's about kind of where I went wrong.
Mm.
And that's not to say there weren't faults on both sides, but it's to say at that point actually what I needed to do was reflect on myself and see where I could improve on that. We need to critically ask ourselves these questions, but we need to do both. We also need to talk about, I'm looking forward to September 30th, by the way. I have been since you sent that message.
We don't
need to talk about that if you don't want to, but I'm really,
do you know what, I'm really excited about this is that PJ's been really enthusiastic about this show recently, and he's you know how he's an amazing interviewer as well. He's basically like, I've hatched this idea of him where we're going to do a show where like it's half an hour him interviewing me and half an hour me interviewing him. So we'll talk more about that at the time. But that's going to be like my birthday gift towards the end of October.
Amazing.
It's going to be the birthday edition. Stay tuned for that, everyone. Because I don't really talk much about myself in these interviews, but it's going to be an interesting exploration. But yes, I think that's really interesting. I mean, for me, this is something I'm going to say tentatively because it's not definitive. It certainly works for me. I think when you write a breakup poem, or even if you pull someone aside and you say, hey, you're being stupid, ultimately, a lot of that is you having a conversation with yourself anyway. Is actually all those things that you want to say to someone else, you're noticing because they exist in you. And you need to open your eyes and pay more attention to what you're actually saying here. And take heed as well.
Yeah, no, obviously.
Like, that's not in defense of like bitchy poems about someone else after you've broken up with them. That's just me saying like, you know, notice what you're doing.
And notice what you, it's true. You see someone like writing one of those poems and you want to tell them like, cop on, like, or you're being stupid kind of thing. But we all do those things. We all have to reflect on our mistakes. I agree. Like, we all have room to grow.
Cool. We're going to take a little break here and just listen to a few more of Jake's pieces. We'll be back in a tick. Jake, I want to talk to you. I want to talk to you about Boomerang, and I want to talk to you about what it means to you and what it means to the scene, because coming from a perspective of someone who comes to Boomerang a lot, thank you. It's such an amazing space. What you've created, and not just you, of course.
Yeah.
We'll go into that in a minute. But what you've created is a kind of family, I think. And that's a family where new people come and join and are very welcome to. But you do get the same faces all the time, and we keep coming back because we love it, because it feels safe and it feels strong and it feels very open and loving.
Yeah.
So first off, thank you.
Thank you. That's a really, it means a lot to hear that. I've got a little bit of pins. What's that thing? My hair's.
Oh, goosebumps.
I've got goosebumps.
That's
lovely. I
would like give you an on air hug, but we'd knock the mic over and it'd be really dodgy.
I can't really describe how much. It's so nice when people say that to me, and it's so nice that it's growing and that, you know. We went to Edinburgh going, oh, what's going to happen? We had people return to come back to Boomerang in Edinburgh. We had everyone, like, people telling us it's a safe space who, in London, we haven't even communicated that it's a safe space for these kind of people. We had trans people in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
And to my knowledge, we haven't in London. Coming up to us and saying, I feel safe here, like, this is, please come back next year. And it nearly like brought me to tears. It felt like a place where people felt comfortable and to talk about whatever they needed to talk about. And also, so to hear that again and to know that's happening, and to, you know, and that's not just me, like, that's Joel and Tyrone. Massive parts of that, obviously. It's all of us, but also as we sit here, we pay homage to what came before, and the reason we exist is because of Forget What You Heard. And it's because that ethos was at Forget What You Heard, and they created Family. And, you know, Forget What You Heard wouldn't exist without Sage and Time, which hasn't existed for 3 years now. And that was run by Amy Aker, Annalise, I can't remember the rest, but those two definitely. Mm. And that was, I feel like that is the kind of the history of where you get to Boomerang. And it's nice to know that we've created a family. And I do feel like that. And that feels so lovely. And I feel like people can come and be who they want. And I'm not allowed to say names, but we also have our first Boomerang relationship.
Boomerang relationship?
And as in, not one of the hosts. A relationship that started at Boomerang Club and is like two people who attend Boomerang Club are in a relationship. Me, Joel and Tyrone got very excited. Two people got together because of Boomerang Club, because they kept seeing each other at Boomerang Club.
See, part of me is like,
We'll discuss it off air.
Cool, we will.
Yeah.
Part of me, that makes me feel cool. Part of me thinks like that's really sweet and awesome, and that's kind of inevitable given the atmosphere, and it's wonderful. And another part of me is like, is this going to be like the London Light, where there's a column at the back of the paper that says, you know, near misses or whatever it is? So you're like, oh, I saw that bloke sitting opposite me, and he had nice hair, and he smiled at me. And we need to, oh my God, when you bring out the scene. Okay.
Yeah.
Gonna have like near misses at Boomerang.
Yeah, that's, that would be amazing.
That's so lame, but it's also okay, I think.
Yeah, I wish I could. There's so much I want to talk about.
Yes, I mean, talk about things that you want to talk about.
I mean, yeah.
It's not about me.
We want to create a further. I don't think I'm gonna. Like, we want to create things that help. So now we've got Boomerang and we've got a family like to grow that. You know, and it's always a pop about being part of the community, and it's nice to know that you are a loved part of the community and people like coming to perform features like it. They like coming to feature because it's a good atmosphere. Apparently, I've been told, you know, Harry Baker asked to come and do Harry Baker and Chris Reed were like, can we come and do part of our show at Boomerang Club? Because it's really nice to perform and it's a nice venue. And we said, yeah, of course. So it's nice to know that, and nice to know we're creating a family. And sometimes it's really difficult, you know, when you Joel and me are really close friends, and me and Tyrone as well. Me and Tyrone don't argue, though. We just go for lunch in Nando's and high five. me and Joel argue. So, like, it's not all happy families behind the scenes. But then it's a community, but obviously the other side of that is it's a business, and you have to keep yourself going. And I mean, I say at the end of most Boomerangs, it's the people that keep me going, like the people who come month in, month out. So to hear that from a wonderful regular is really nice.
Oh. Yeah, it's a really important space on the scene, especially for me. Yeah, I would definitely attribute whatever may unfold on the 30th to like feeling that safety there, and
good.
It kind of taking away and doing it for myself based on that.
I'm definitely having it. It's in my diary, so it's been in my diary since you said.
Thank
of course.
You. And you on the first as well.
Yeah, Mouse Wide Shut. That's good. It's lovely for people to say like, well done for Boomerang. And it's nice to know that, because it's hard work. But every single person in every single room who goes to poetry is the most important person in poetry. Every person who attends an event and makes those events come back every month, give yourself a warm, warm hug, because without you, Boomerang wouldn't happen. Without you, Spoken wouldn't happen. Without you, Boxed In wouldn't happen. Without you, all these communities, and they are all communities, wouldn't exist. These warm hugs. And also, come. The family is not closed. We want new members all the time. Just a bigger family is always better, and we can all support each other, and we can all hug each other. And also, another message. You know, families argue, families fight, but that's fine, and we'll get through it because we're family. And you feel sad sometimes, and go see your family, like, go be part of it. But also, if you need to take a break, don't feel any way about that. And try and make more time for each other on a personal level. You know, dinner's good, dinner's really good. You know, have dinner with someone, start like just doing stuff that isn't actually just watching a night, like critical response to each other's work, where you have tea and coffee and sit and talk and you know, like form a long-lasting friendship, do something, write more, and just have fun. Like, it's fun. Don't take it too seriously. You can get there without taking it too seriously. There's going to be Boomerang Club badges. on another note, so like after the soppy message, which I don't know if came off clearly enough, we're having badges. So
my face right now.
So entry to Boomerang Club is £3 or £4 and you get a badge.
And yeah. What do we like it just says Boomerang Club and you wear it around. See, I thought for a minute there, I mean, that does sound amazing. Don't let me take the heat off that. That was great. I thought you meant like, you know, if you've come to Boomerang Club 3 times, you get this colour badge. And then if you come to Boomerang Club 10 times, you get this colour.
Do it. Like an award system.
Reward scheme, yeah.
Well, you know, we do the... It has to come back. November. It was supposed to be November, where every 6 months we do like a 4 people who we've really loved on the open mic.
Mm.
And that will be back soon. We'll probably, when East London goes active, which it will very soon, hopefully, we will be launching it. Hopefully, like, I'm going to get in trouble. I'm not even in, this is a discussion that I have to have with other people as well. And I'm just being like,
basically, stay tuned.
Stay tuned. Boomerang Club's announcement, like,
Check Boomerang out. So how do we, if we want to find you, and if we, so if we, okay, first off, if we've really enjoyed your work on the show,
yeah,
how do we find you personally after this?
Jake Wildhall, no, none of them hyphens, 3 separate words, poet on Facebook, Jake Wildhall poet on Facebook, Boomerang Club W6, Facebook,
mm-hmm.
Even if you want Typeface Poetry Collective, on Facebook, yeah. We didn't talk about Typeface, but check them out. They're all great. Yeah, check out Boomerang Club videos on YouTube, because mm-hmm. there's some smashers on there. There really is. Yeah. There's videos from Joel Taylor, Harry Baker, Bogdan Pierce, Checky, Harry and Chris, Katie Bonner, and then loads of lovely Boomerang Club regulars like who have now gone on to feature, like Dee McKee, Maddie Godfrey. Who else is on there? Antonio King, Laurie Eves, all those kind of people. So, you know, we get videos of our regulars who have gone on to do the open mic special and or feature. So, yeah, check us out. Natasha's on there as well. Natasha's poem on there is lovely.
Mm.
And we release videos every once in a while. It should be every week, but at the moment it's every couple of weeks. So check us out on there. And we're on Twitter, Boomerang Club W6. Basically, Boomerang Club W6 is how you find us. If you search Boomerang Club W6 into Google, you'll get us. And Jake Wildhall poet.
And in terms of physical geography, now that we've plugged Boomerang a bajillion times, as is proper, if anybody wants to come to Boomerang, it is the first Tuesday of every month, not the second. And it is at the Rutland Arms, yeah, on the bank of the river next to Hammersmith Bridge. Nearest station is Hammersmith. It starts. It's always like doors at 7, but it's not really going to kick off until 8.
Yeah, no. We start promptly at 8.
And now the sign up is mainly online.
Yeah, pre sign up. So you have to sign up on pre sign. I hope you haven't missed it doing this fucking interview.
It's all right. I'll get over it.
But there's also 5 slots available on the door, which will be done from the hat.
We'll leave it there, but thank you so much, Jake, for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it was really wonderful.
I hope I haven't waffled too much.
So we'll sort it out. I'm going to leave you with Jake's final piece for us.
This piece is called Solomon's World. I have woken up 3 times this week. Same dream, same restless sleep, same unknown skyscraper tall. Its shadow holds me. Same 3.5 you I wake up to. Dream-filled. Question-filled. Full for dinner but not for pudding. Mother's side I learnt well. You giver of umbrellas to rainbows. You who learns first lessons under roofs made of treetops. Your potential is a galaxy. And when I dream of you. I dream my skin is a bulletproof vest I cannot give to you. And we are living in a war zone. And for you, today is the first day that war broke, and up until today I could answer all your questions. But today, your footsteps were a threat. Your posture was a man wielding a knife. You are 13. How do I tell you your footsteps are still sunshine? Question 1. Why did they stop me, Dad?
The day you realise you cannot relate to your son's anguish, your thought process will be a bridge, your shoes will be made of concrete, and you will realise you still have no trouble catching a taxi, so you lie. It was a mistake. Wrong time, wrong place. This distrust will make your relationship a maze you will find yourself in again and again. Question 2. Why did they call me that, Dad? The day abuse rolls off your white privileged skin and hits your son in the face like a sock full of coins, that maze will become a labyrinth. And only in the centre you can find all the answers. So you dance around them, enchanted by the patterns in the markings, until questions now he's hardly asking, because you never provide the answers. And then you wake, shaking, in a pool of your own perspiration, minds racing, and this is all quite hard to take in, because right now you are digesting all his unanswered questions. I think tomorrow I will take him to the park and wear hope like a band-aid I know will fall off one day. But right now, I'm back to being tongue-tied. His footsteps are back to being sunshine. On the way home, I give him a shoulder ride. I say, hey, son, life is like a funfair ride. It has its ups and downs, and you will get scared sometimes. But when you get off, I'll always try and be by your side. And yeah, your record will skip beats, but I'll always try and help you back in the groove. And your potential really is a galaxy. And you look down at me like, Dad, I am 3.5 years old. I don't think that makes any sense. And we laugh together. But I still dream, deep in the thought of the unknown, deep in all these unanswered questions. Question 3. Why do people treat us different? And although my thought process is still a bridge, I hope it's one we can walk together. And although I'll never really understand what you're put through, I'll try to. And I hope everyone else wakes up from this nightmare the same way I do and realizes equality is a branch on this tree of life we are yet to reach.